Jaap Valkhoff, he writes the songs, he plays the accordion, and he sings them. Langs de Maas, alongside the big river Maas, and it was pretty well the conclusion of the proceedings today. Let me cue up my little song here and go for track number two, and there you go.
It's 10 a.m. and you're listening to the Jewish Hour on KBOO Portland. Gittin Morgan, Boker Tov, good morning, and thanks for tuning in to the Portland Jewish Hour. I'm Liz Schwartz. Today, we have just such an incredible show. We'll be spending the hour with Sasha Reich, Executive Director and Founder of Jewish Theater Collaborative. And joining Sasha is composer-cellist Gideon Freudman, who created the music for JTC's current production, The Ministry of Special Cases. We began the hour with music from Argentinian Jewish composer Osvaldo Golijov, the second movement of his work, Last Round, an homage to tango composer Astor Piazzolla. But right now we're going to bring in Sasha and talk to Sasha. How are you, Sasha? Good morning.
I'm well, thank you.
And good morning, Gideon. How are you?
Good morning.
It's great to see you both and to have you both here. Sasha, we're going to start with you. I'd like you to talk about the Ministry of Special Cases is JTC's second Page to Stage production. And can you explain briefly what Page to Stage is for our audience?
Sure. The concept of Page to Stage is that over the course of a season, we'll take a journey with a novel and with our audiences from the first pages of the book to a main stage production. And along the way, we'll create original pieces that invite the audience into the understanding the content, the context, the themes of the novel so that their experience of the main stage production will be that much broader and richer. We're also trying to kind of trigger an everybody reads momentum with a novel over the course of the year, really getting the community reading the novel and thinking about it, discussing it together.
So to ask kind of a silly question, so basically you're not staging a play, you're taking a book and adapting it for the stage.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So now that we've established how this works, so The Ministry of Special Cases is a novel by Nathan Englander. And talk about why you chose this particular book to adapt.
Sure. When we think about our selection of novels, part of what we're looking for is a really great book. It needs to be a book that people are going to be interested in reading, people are going to like to read, and be interested for a broad range of reasons, but it needs to be a good book. Good story, good characters, good dialogue, good language. The other piece that we're looking at is a novel that's meaty enough in its subject matter that we can really dig our teeth into it over the course of the season, that its merits kind of not only a derivative work, but other works that we're creating that explore its thematic content. One of the things that I'm really excited about the opportunity with Page to Stage is to use the novel as a means of opening a door to a world that our audiences are unfamiliar with. So in this case, this year, it's been Argentina during the Dirty War in the 70s and 80s. Most people have some awareness of the subject matter, but it's very, tends to be very shallow.
Can you explain the Dirty War? What is that exactly?
Sure. The 20th century was pretty turbulent in Argentina. A number of coups over the course of the century, but the things had gotten very chaotic in Argentina, and there were enormous amount of kidnappings and real economic straits in Argentina. And the junta, there was a military dictatorship that moved in to straighten things out. And they initiated a process of national reorganization. And between 76 and 83, over 30,000 people were disappeared, never to be seen again. And a lot of those people were protesters,
a lot of students, intellectuals,
yeah. the usual suspects. And there was also a high percentage of Jews. Mm-hmm. That were disappeared during that time.
Were the Jews in Argentina specifically targeted for being Jewish?
I don't know that they were specifically targeted for being Jewish. They were, you know, the book talks about Jews kind of having this magnet towards being involved in the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. So they were probably disproportionate in all of the usual suspect categories that we just talked about. Intellectuals, socialists, people who got involved, journalists, so that high representation may reflect the high representation in terms of their disappearances. But it's a complicated love story of Jews in Argentina because it's after World War II, Jews were welcomed as were Nazis and given refuge in the country. And that's made for kind of a dangerous context to live.
Yeah. It almost sounds to me like the truth and reconciliation process in South Africa, where you had committers of terrible atrocities living side by side with their victims, or in Rwanda, the same sort of thing.
And I think exactly the same thing happens in Argentina, that the people who managed to survive the junta and the dirty war walked down the street, and the people who were responsible for the atrocities, most of them got off. Videla was let off by Menem, who was, you know.
These are one dictator being pardoned by another dictator, basically.
Well, by a president who was around, who never saw justice brought forth out of the bombing of the AMIA building in Argentina. It's kind of a, you know, Argentina's been back in the news. It's a surreal context, great context for a novel and a play.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the novel. Was it the novel that interested you, or the author, or both? What drew you to this book?
I've been in love with Nathan Englander's work for years. Mm-hmm. He's predominantly a short story author. His stories are, he always creates these remarkably larger than life characters. He pits them against each other in unbelievable circumstances, and then he gives them fantastic language to hash it out. Mm. And that's true from every short story of his that I've read. And then with this novel in particular, it just keeps going on. There's scene after scene of these incredible characters, incredible dialogue, and unforgettable context and stakes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Talk a little bit about what are the challenges of adapting a novel to the stage. What do you, or also before you get to the challenges, where do you start once you've picked your book? What's the first step?
We have a core company of artists, and we read the novel together. We read it separately, and then we discuss it a lot together. Really pick it apart for its themes and its what moves us, what stories resonate with us, how those stories resonate with what's going on in our world today. And we really work towards identifying a, you know, only a section of the novel will make it to the stage. And so that really reflects the story that we want to tell, mm-hmm. The story that's most resonant with us in the course of the novel. And so in the case of this novel, we were really drawn to the story of a family that's really struggling in this context of the dirty war, and their efforts to survive emotionally intact, to survive together. Mm-hmm. A couple who really, spoiler alert, son is abducted, is disappeared. And they're just heroic efforts at surviving together and maintaining their humanity in a world that's gone absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. So when you decide which threads of the novel you're going to follow onto the stage and which ones you are not, I mean, it seems to me, especially in a book like this, it's fairly tightly woven. That must be a really hard process. You know, it's like, oh, I really want to include this part, but...
One of the things you find translating a novel to the stage is that something that might take three different scenes or three different storylines to really make a point in the novel, to really be fleshed out as a thematic through line, can take only one on stage.
So it's a little more efficient delivery of plot?
And themes, it's, you know, you have a lot of things working for you that you don't have in the novel. You have the visual world, the oral world. You know, we make choices so that we give the audience a lot to hold on to, but I think it's maybe something more like poetry when you shed some of the words, that when you put more space around some of the words and you lift them in space and sound, in space and with sound, they're just very powerful. They just communicate very potently.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of sound, let's bring Gideon into the conversation now. Gideon Freudman is a composer, performer, and cello innovator. As a soloist, Gideon uses technology to sample, loop, and layer tracks in real time to create music that is complex, nuanced, creative, and compelling. His music has been featured on NPR, This American Life, and he was a TED Talk speaker. He recently released his 19th CD, a duo album for cello and mandolin. He composes music for theater, film, and dance, and also performs live soundtracks for classic silent films. Wow. That's quite an amazing resume right there. And that only just briefly scratches the surface of what you do. But Gideon, speaking of sound, how did you approach creating the sound for this production? Where did you start?
Well, one of the things I was became apparent was that there are three distinct settings and themes for in which a lot of action takes place in this play. So we needed to find music that described each of those. So there was a home scene and a ministry setting and searching. And so each of those needed its own, you know, sound and musical theme to define it. So when you're in that setting, you know, that can help to highlight it. Or if you're moving there, then, you know, it can kind of be a little tip off. You know, if you're watching a movie, sometimes you'll hear this low, rumbling, ominous sound, and nothing bad has happened yet, but you know it's coming. That was done very effectively in Jaws, you know, a long time ago and before that as well.
Well, I think of it in every episode of Law and Order. As soon as you've got the low, sustained cello or bass, it's like, oh, somebody's dead.
Right. Every time you hear a cello, you know, somebody's dead or about
exactly.
to die. Or at the very least, somebody's going to be depressed.
Right.
So there's that. And this play is fascinating in many ways, and among them in that there are different scenes happening on the stage at the same time. We move from one to the other, and sometimes just a little hint at this music informs you in a literal or almost subconscious way. It's like now we're back home. We just were somewhere else, and now we've moved to this place, and so that can work that way. So there was, you know, creating music for that, and then I worked closely with Christopher Beatty, who is it Beatty or Beatty? I don't even know how he pronounced it.
I think it's Beatty.
I wish my email would pronounce names for me.
Wouldn't that be nice?
As if the internet's not already making enough decisions for me. So anyway, he's really adept at this, and was able to take sounds and themes that I created and manipulate them and apply them in different ways and kind of hint and suggest at things and overlap sounds. That was extremely effective.
So Christopher Beatty is, just to clarify, he's the sound designer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
For the show?
Yeah.
So Gideon, can you start off with the home music?
Sure.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
So the home music, there's a plucked pizzicato theme and a melody, and they were used together and separately. So I'll demonstrate them both separately. This is one piece of it. So that's the accompaniment, which is at times used on its own, and here's a melody. So that's just a small piece of the melody, and now if I'll put them together. Thank you. So I'm using a looper. So I played that bass line and hit the pedal, and it's playing back on its own. And I played the melody over that, and I can add layers on top of that. So I'm going to play this melody again and layer it. That's an example of how they can go together. And sometimes often when I was recording this and working with Chris, we would take bits and pieces of this and change the tempo or change the way that I played it. So the same piece of music would be there and allude to a setting, but there'd be a new mood. If I get close to the bridge with my bow, I can get this kind of a mysterious sound, go like
sort of buzzy sounding. It almost sounds like you're listening to it through a door or something.
There's this,
and plus it's buzzy sounding because you're playing near your bridge. So there's this sort of not quite right feeling about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And yeah. that's exactly the purpose of uh-huh. it. So we might be in a different setting in the play. And then, meanwhile, here's what's happening back home. And you hear this little melody played that way. And you say, we're going back home, but something's not quite right at home. Something's off.
Right. Let's hear a little bit about something that sounds very contrasting. So that was the home theme. What other music did you create for this production that is quite a contrast? And in what way is it a contrast?
Perhaps I will pop in.
Sure.
So the home really dominates the first act of the play, mm-hmm. whereas act two takes us into this tremendous search by the parents. And so we were looking for music that could really carry us on this journey. When you asked about the challenges of adapting the novel for the stage, there are, I think, 42 scenes in the play.
Wow.
And so the having the music keep looping us back and keep pushing us forward and pulling us swiftly out of one into another is really effective. But perhaps you'll play a little bit of The Search, which okay. really takes us into a different...
Actually, Gideon, before you do that, I just need to remind everybody that you are listening to the Portland Jewish Hour. My name is Liz Schwartz, and we are on KABU 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM in Philomath and Corvallis, and of course, anywhere on planet Earth at KBOO.FM. And I'm joined in the studio today with Executive Director and Founder of Jewish Theater Collaborative, Sasha Reich, and composer and cellist Gideon Freudman, and we're talking about JTC's latest production, The Ministry of Special Cases, and Gideon is now going to play us some more music that he created, and this is from the Searching theme Searching for Pato, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So just to clarify, this is only broadcasting on planet Earth?
Right.
I was under the impression we were reaching wider than that, but that's okay.
Sorry.
I'll have a talk with my management team. All right, this is the Searching theme. Thank you.
That definitely conveys a sense of looking, sort of endless looking and not finding. Mm-hmm. I hear that very strongly. What I also noticed was, and maybe it's just my own Jewish sensibilities, but it sounds Jewish to me. I mean, some of the intervals that you choose and you know, the augmented intervals and things like that. Was that a conscious choice on your part?
No, it's not a conscious choice. And it's interesting you mention it too, because that's something that's obviously just seated kind of deep inside of me. And I mean, I'll have people who listen to my, you know, come up to me after concerts and make various comments. And, you know, somebody will come up and go, oh yeah, I totally heard that Zeppelin thing you were doing. I like totally sounded like some early Zepp, man. It's totally cool, you know. And somebody else will say, oh, I just feel these Eastern European Jewish roots in your music. So, I mean, everything kind of seeps in there. And there are some, you know, there are some themes and intervals that, you know, I know certain kinds of melodies that will evoke one thing or another. And occasionally, you know, I'll do this in a, you know, it's a conscious effort to do it. But more often than not, it just kind of makes its way in there, whether I want it to or not.
All of the influences that touch on your musical sensibilities just kind of seep out.
Well, each and every one of us is a melting pot.
Absolutely. So, speaking of musical influence, can you talk a little bit about your own Jewish background, how you grew up, and what part root music played in your background as a kid?
Sure. I grew up in a college town in Connecticut, and my parents were Jewish, not particularly religious, but you know, we celebrated the Sabbath, you know, Friday night, and we'd go to synagogue for high holidays. And my dad was really a music lover. I mean, he was a French professor for his profession, but he had considered becoming a musician. He had contemplated being a jazz pianist. He listened to classical music all the time at home, and he played he played the piano and flute, and he was a main influence in getting me and all my siblings to play music when we were young.
So did you have like the Freudman chamber group, the family chamber group, making music after dinner?
No, we had the Freudman chamber group, you know, shouting at each other during dinner.
Well, yes. But
that's part of our Jewish experience.
Of course.
But,
it's
like that scene in Annie Hall. But no, we weren't, there was not that sort of collaboration. And my siblings, you know, who all played at various times, various levels of proficiency, were not one of them was interested in pursuing it professionally. They were.
They left that up to you.
They were far more sensible.
I remember my voice teacher years and years ago said to me, if you can do anything else, meaning besides be a professional singer, you should do it. If you have any other skills, you should hone them and explore them, because being a musician is a dog's life. Mm-hmm. And I've found, you know, that's true in a lot of ways, but I've also found that the people who do it, they literally can't do anything else. It's not that they don't have other skills. It's that this is what calls to them. This is what burns in them. And the other things that they know how to do, they either fit into their music or they keep as a sideline or a hobby or, you know, just something they do for pleasure. Mm-hmm. But it's something you have to do.
No, but if you're creative, you can find other ways to suffer too.
So, absolutely.
You
know, absolutely.
You need to confine yourself to one endeavor.
We're going to take a little break. I'm going to do some community announcements, and then we'll be coming back to talk more with Gideon Freudman and Sasha Reich about the Jewish Theater Collaborative's latest production, The Ministry of Special Cases, which is up and running until April 11th, and you should all go see it. My name is Liz Schwartz. This is The Jewish Hour, and we'll be right back at you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Occupy the Farm, playing at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, April 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
What we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
Occupy the Farm tells the inspiring story of 200 farmers who occupy the last piece of farmland in California's urban East Bay, planting 15,000 seedlings to feed the community and disrupt plans to build a shopping mall. That's Occupy the Farm, Thursday, April 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
If you're looking for a place to celebrate Passover this year, visit the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland site at jewishportland.org and check out all of their Passover events. Jewish Theater Collaborative presents Page to Stage, The Ministry of Special Cases, based on the novel by Nathan Englander, March 14th through April 11th, 2015. For more information, go to jewishtheatercollaborative.org, and theater in Jewish theater is spelled with an R-E, not an E-R, just so you know. The Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education events. This afternoon, artist Hank Pender will be speaking at 2:30. Hank Pender, by the way, did all of the sets and designed all the sets and painted all the sets for the Ministry of Special Cases, but his work is also currently hanging at the museum. During the Second World War, Hank Pender grew up in Harlem, the Netherlands. His home was just 10 miles from Amsterdam, where Anne Frank was in hiding. Hank's father, who was not Jewish, was targeted by the Nazis as a so-called political opponent. His family hid Jews and others from the Nazis. Hank will share his memories from the war and the inspiration for his work currently on display. Also at the Jewish Museum, they are continuing exhibit Anne Frank, A History for Today, through April 14th. This is a traveling exhibit from the Anne Frank Center USA, which provides a moving experience to visitors and serves to spark community dialogue about the effects of intolerance in the past and today. The exhibit also provides an opportunity to explore positive values of diversity and tolerance. Moisha House PDX has a whole bunch of events for young adults aged 21 to 30 to help them become more involved in Jewish community, to meet others their age, and develop Jewish identity. On April 4th, Moisha House is participating in a nationwide social justice Seder, second night Seder, from 7 to 11 p.m. I believe it's every Tuesday or every Thursday, I'm not sure which, they present Moisha Meditations, Om with Shalom. This is yoga and other meditative practices, April 2nd, 9th, and 16th at 7:15 p.m. Come to breathe, learn, and be. Wear comfy clothes and an open mind. Moisha House is also participating in a Chametz Fest on April 11th at the Lucky Lab in North Portland. With our friends at Neva Shalom, come to the private room at Lucky Lab to celebrate the conclusion of Passover, Mizrach style. So that means for the end of Passover, when you're so sick of matzah, you never want to see another piece of matzah again, come drink beer, have pizza, enjoy all the Chametz that you can. And one last thing from Moisha House, they're offering a game night on April 12th at 5 p.m. For more information about all these Moisha House events, contact moishahousepdx@gmail.com or check out their Facebook page. On Saturday, April 18th, At 7 p.m., Honey from the Rock, a joyous evening of story, song, and amazing juggling feats. This is presented by Panay Or of Portland. This is a family-friendly evening of performance by Rabbi Mark Novak and his wife, Renee Brachfeld. For more information, go to panayorpdx.org or jewishstorytelling.brownpapertickets.com.
It takes all of us to keep KABU strong. KABU is your radio station. Did you know that you can give gifts of stock to KABU? We are able to quickly turn these donations into support for the important daily work of KABU. How do you do this? Call 503-231-8032, extension 201, or email monica@kabu.org for information on how to make a stock gift. Thank you for supporting KABU Community Radio.
We're back with Sasha Reich and Gideon Freudman, and I'm Liz Schwartz, and this is the Portland Jewish Hour. We have live in studio guests, which I guess is better than dead in studio guests. And Gideon is a fantastic composer cellist who created the music for JTC's current production, The Ministry of Special Cases. This is based on the novel by Nathan Englander. It takes place in Argentina during the Dirty War, specifically begins in 1976. Sasha, I want to go back to you and ask you, how is this? This is your second page to stage, full stage production. How does this experience differ from last year when you were working with A Pigeon and a Boy, which was an Israeli novel? I forget the author's name.
Meir Shalev.
Thank you. How is this experience different?
Well, every play is a different experience. I mean, each play, each novel begs its own approach. So you bring your toolkit to the table, but it develops very differently. Last year, we had a cast of 9 actors. All but 2 of them played 2 roles. This year we have a cast of 9 actors and they play upwards of 40 roles.
Wow. A lot of quick backstage changes.
A lot of quick backstages, except 3 of them only play themselves. So 6 of them are playing 37 characters.
Wow.
So it's a very different... the play itself is a very different experience for audiences. The Pigeon and a Boy was very was emotionally cathartic for many people.
Mm. Why is that, do you think?
It was a love story. It was history that was everybody's either been a parent or been watched their parents age or lost parents. Like there's the experience hit home in very different ways.
Mm. Or else everybody's been one of the 2 people in the young couple who were in love.
Or, exactly. Yeah. Right. Most people have had the experience of being in love.
Right.
This novel is really a different ride for audiences. Mm. It's just when you get emotionally involved, the novel or the play pushes you out and kind of engages your brain. And it's a play not about between, you know, conflict between people, but between an individual and society. Mm-hmm. And so there's something kind of Brechtian about it. I mean, one of the things that I really responded to in the novel, which some people see when they read it and some people don't, is incredible humor, ironic and awful dark humor that Englander brings to the story, mm-hmm. which and theatricality. Which really, for me, makes it digestible, and that's what we've tried to translate to the stage. And one of the things, and maybe we can use this as a lead-in to listen to some more music, is, you know, the Ministry of Special Cases, which is the title of the novel and where we don't arrive to until the middle of Act Two, is, you know, it's Englander takes us to an incredibly Kafkaesque place, this mad bureaucracy, to realize that on stage is quite thrilling. The theatrical challenges of this novel are wildly different from that of A Pigeon and a Boy. But creating with nine actors this this bubbling place of mayhem and ridiculousness, and ultimately quite darkly threatening place, was really exciting. And so when we sat down and we're thinking about what is this, where does this live musically, we turned to Gideon and we said, what is the music of this space? And he offered us.
So Gideon, let's hear some ministry music. I feel like I'm talking to you about heavy metal now.
You know, we're not quite there.
Because there's this heavy metal band called Ministry. No,
that's coming.
Wow, that is incredibly twisted music. Yeah,
so the ministry is where everything is off. There's, you know, reality is skewed, and whatever you're expecting, it's not going to happen.
What I really like is that you didn't set out, or maybe you did set out, but you didn't end up writing a piece that sounds like scary. You know, you didn't start off with like the heavy chords and the dark sonorities and things like that that imply, you know, abandon all hope, ye who enter here kind of thing. But that you start off with this sort of inane little waltz, and it almost implies a kind of hope on the part of Pato's parents that they might actually
right.
get somewhere.
Well, there is some hope. I mean, they're going there with the intention and the hope of finding their son, of getting some help, and
right.
getting some resolution.
And the world they encounter is absurd.
Of course, yeah. This sounds like the kind of thing you'd write for a UNESCO play.
Well, and I would say that much of this novel is...
absurdist?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just gotten to the point where Pato has been disappeared, and so I haven't entered the ministry yet, but I'm preparing myself for a lot of...
It's looming out there.
A lot of crazy stuff. Yeah, for sure. Gideon, I'm curious, why did you choose a waltz?
Well, I've just always loved waltzes. I'm extremely drawn to them. And you know, you can play with the tempo in any music, but to my ears anyway, to my sensibility, a waltz has a little more wiggle room in the tempo. I mean, if you're playing something that's in 4/4 time. In Western music, most everything is either in 4 or 3.
Right.
So 4 is 1, 2, I'll turn the volume up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Mm-hmm. And you always have, you know, the strongest beat is the 1 and the second is a 3. One, two, three, four, you know, and then rock music, there's a strong backbeat, but.
Right.
But with a waltz, there's, you know, this. You know, you can kind of rush to second beat or lay back in it.
Or if you're doing it in a very Viennese sort of way, you would pause between the second and the third.
Right.
And it almost becomes like a habanera. I'm getting really geeky and insidery here. Sorry, folks. I'm showing my musician and musicology colors. So in my other life, I write program notes for the Oregon Symphony, and I'm a music historian, so I find all of this fascinating. And I just had reason to rewrite some notes about Ravel's La Valse and also some other waltzes that were written after World War I that kind of reminded me of what you wrote, because basically it's this... What Ravel did was he wrote this goodbye to Europe with this waltz that starts off being this very elegant dance piece that represented the highest of European culture before the war. And then it just completely disintegrates in this very chaotic, frightening way.
Mm-hmm.
And your piece disintegrates in a different way. It's not chaotic as much as it's kind of creepy, but I think it's definitely appropriate for what the play is about.
I think it's sweet, and then it gets kind of twisted. It's
right.
a little bit ominous.
Right.
It doesn't actually creep me out. It just makes me feel like, what's going on? And there's this one odd note in it that just keeps coming back. It's just like every time you're about to settle that note that. Volume's off again. That note right
that
there.
Note, yeah. It doesn't belong in the key.
And to go up here. It just keeps going there, like every time. It's almost like, you know, like you keep like stepping on that same banana peel or something.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you go around a corner, it's like, oh no, this again.
Or you're, right.
You know, it's like, how did I end up back in this hallway?
So if you're just tuning in, I'm Liz Schwartz. You're listening to the Portland Jewish Hour. I'm here with Gideon Freudman, cellist and composer, and Sasha Reich, the executive director and founder of Jewish Theater Collaborative. And we're talking about Jewish Theater Collaborative's current production, The Ministry of Special Cases, for which Gideon wrote and recorded all of the music. And there's one part of the music that we haven't heard yet. And there's a part where before Pato has disappeared, he's the young student. He goes to a rock concert with some friends, and they go to hear a musician named Spinetta. And Spinetta was a really amazing and very important rock musician in South America, in Argentina in particular, but in all of South America, and his music was very influential. So you composed something that was Spinetta-esque, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, one of the things that I'm actually really pleased with with this play. When Sasha requested it, I thought it was a tall order, but there's nothing like you're not going to rise to a challenge unless you're challenged. And she wanted all of the music to be created, all the music, all the sounds to be created on the cello. So, and I've spent years, you know, trying to find new interesting sounds and settings for the cello. So I appreciated that. So there's a rock concert scene, and so I had to get back in my Led Zeppelin mode or
I love hearing distortion on the cello. That's a first for me. That's pretty awesome. I want to geek out for just a moment and ask you about the instrument you're playing. So for our radio audience who can't see this instrument, it's basically a cutaway cello.
Yeah, it's an electric cello. It looks sort of like an anchor. A little bit like an anchor.
Yeah, it's not a full body, hollow body cello the way you would imagine a cello. It's got shoulders and it's got a neck and it's got the hips.
Yeah, the bottom.
But it's just basically a solid piece of wood. And why do you play with that as opposed to an acoustic cello?
Well, I use both. Mm-hmm. And in recording the soundtrack for this, I used both also. Mm-hmm. The acoustic cello has many wonderful qualities, including distortion. You know, there's all these great sounds you get down by the bow. I mean, I've got some pedals, and I can explain all that in a moment. But, you know, this cello, unless, you know, if I'm just playing it in a, quote, normal way, and trying to get a pretty sound, you know.
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to play that.
Well, if you want to sound like a cello, you have to play that.
Yes.
But if you get down close to the bridge and really dig in. So those are sounds that, that's not done with any pedals, distortion pedal or anything. That's just a bowing technique. And it's actually even more effective on an acoustic cello than an electric because there's more complex overtones and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the electric because I have more control with other effects. So there's, you know, the somewhat natural tone. There's a chorus pedal that kind of tweaks the sound a little bit. I can use a delay. This echo to make sounds, and of course the distortion pedal, just when you need that, and a looper, which I use a lot, which lets me play a whole phrase and repeat it. So for example, if I go like that and I time it just right, I'll hit this pedal, play that phrase, hit the pedal again, and now I'm not playing the cello.
Right.
And so that's just looping, and then I can play over it. And I can add layers to it, like this. And so on.
You can sound like a whole chamber orchestra, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
So the electric cello, I find, is better for that. If I really want to color the sound, I can do that. Particularly if I want to loop, I can get this altered sound, that's just that. If I want to add a distorted piece to the loop or some other effect, I'm not getting the pure acoustic tone, mucking it up.
So we only have just a few more minutes left. Sasha, I just wanted to ask if you have a sense of how this play has been received by the audiences, because I know you always have these after play conversations where you invite people to stay and talk. And of course, I'm sure you've gotten lots of feedback from friends and in reviews and things like that. But how do you feel that this play has been received?
Well, it's interesting with because of the length of these performances and because of how intense they are, we have actually stepped back from having our traditional talkbacks. Mm. And we're inviting conversation with audiences through alternative means, and we're also working to get communities reading and attending together so that the conversation is going out into the universe, mm-hmm. and that the whole season is kind of a conversation about the subject matter. Mm-hmm. But that does put us in a position where we're not immediately on top of people's experiences.
Yeah, but you've heard from lots of folks, so
we do hear from people, and people also request a lot of time to digest. It's mm-hmm. it's a lot to digest. Yeah. It is a big, complex, epic experience.
Yeah, and it's a very profoundly sad and
it's emotionally sad, and it's.
I think part of what the impact of it for me is that this happened within my lifetime. This was happening when I was a kid. This was happening when you were a kid, the Dirty War. I mean, I remember hearing about it when I was a kid. I was a kid, but I remember hearing about it. I remember hearing about the news about it and the mothers in the plaza of, holding up the signs for the disappeared.
And it's, so. I mean, in different ways happening today in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And that, I think, the reflection that it gives us of the world out there is a dark and absurd one, which is one that we wrestle with every day. And so that's, it's a way to think about our world. It gives a frame for digesting and thinking about, in many ways, the awful world we live in. Mm. And asks audience to sit with that.
Yeah.
So that's a hard one. That's a particularly difficult pill. But it's also wonderfully theatrical, and there's just some delightful places that we've been able to go with our imagination and take audiences as well. So
that's great. So Sasha Reich and Gideon Freudman, I want to thank you both for being on the Jewish Hour today. Gideon, I'd like you to go out with that piece that you mentioned before the show began. You'd written a little, what did you call it, a Hasidic jig?
Yeah, the Hasidic jig.
So we're gonna have Gideon playing a Hasidic jig. This is not part of the music for the play. This is just something he cooked up. I want to thank all of you for joining us today. My name is Liz Schwartz, and I'll be back at you next week with music for Pesach. Stay tuned for the Persian Hour and Zygazint.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on this show. And Sasha, thank you for asking me to
It's been great to be back, Liz. Thank you for having us.
So here is, this is not from the play, but this is a fun little piece. It's we're right after St. Patrick's Day and on the cusp of Passover. So it's the perfect time for the Hasidic jig. Thank you.